Regent Nichols?
Present.
Regent Spillard?
Present.
Secretary Cummings? Vice Chair West?
Present.
Regent Coates?
Present.
Madam Chairman, there are 11 regents present.
All right, thank you. Has everyone had an opportunity to review the minutes of the fourth quarterly meeting? And does anybody have any corrections, additions? Okay, hearing none, I will ask for a motion for approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right, well, good morning, everyone. I am, Chair Milliken is here today, but he's on Zoom, so I agreed to sit in for him today, so I was happy to do so, and good to see everybody here. Good to see so many in person today. The first item that we have on the agenda is Regent Bale.
Yes, we have a number of action items which we considered at our previous committee meeting. I will ask Provost Fisher to...
If it's okay with the Board of Regents, I would love to package them in groups so that we can take them in groups since we've already had the discussion about them. Okay. So we'll take the first two, 1.1 and 1.2, which is approval of an academic suspension of the Adult Education Graduate Certificate and a suspension of the Corporate and Organizational Communications.
Anyone have any questions or other comments or information? If not, entertain a motion to approve action items 1 and 2.
So moved.
Motion.
Second.
Regent Dennison, a second from Regent Ball. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those like sign. Aye. Motion passed.
Comments or information? Not entertain a motion to approve action items.
We'll then take 1.3 and 1.4 together, which is the approval of the Bachelor of Science in Neuroscience and in Data Science.
Any questions, comments concerning those? All right, not all those in favor of approval of action items 3 and 4. I need a motion.
So moved.
Motion Shane. Second Doris. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, like sign.
And the last grouping is 1.5 to 1.9, which is approval of certificates, graduate certificates in marketing and sales, an undergrad in economic data analytics, a graduate in trauma and resilience, a undergrad certificate in food service design, and I guess it's 1 through 8. Sorry, my fault.
All right. Questions, comments concerning those items? Not, we'll entertain a motion.
Okay.
Motion for approval of items 5, 6, 7, and 8 as listed.
Second.
Second, Jane. Thank you. Any discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign.
And then 1.9 is the sabbatical, which has individuals from every college going out on sabbatical, with the greatest number going from what would be PCAL or Potter College Arts and Letters. And we have talked about it, and it will be covered. Classes will be covered in all colleges.
Questions, comments? Not, I'll entertain a motion. Action item 9.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Regent Dennison. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those like sign. And we have one other action item.
Last action item has to deal with this year's University Distinguished Professor recommendations to the Board of Regents. We have two recommendations, and I will ask them to stand as we talk about them so that we can see who they are, and then give them an opportunity, a couple of seconds, to say something. First would be Dr. Gordon Emsley. Anyone see? He has brought distinction to the university through his teaching, research, and public service. He is a scientist who is committed to making science more accessible to broader audiences. He's best known for his research on solar flares, work that has earned him an international reputation, and he has more than 200 peer-reviewed articles, 3 co-authored or authored books, and has secured $5 million in funding for his work from places such as NASA, National Science Foundation, and the Department of Defense. He also contributes, Dr. Emsley's contributions and the depth of his commitment to students' achievement at WKU make him the perfect person for this award. The second is somebody that you have met already, Dr. David Zimmer. He has brought distinction to the university as a scholar who uses his expertise to inform his students, colleagues, and the campus community. He is ambitious and innovative, and his impact is made, he's made for WKU's overwhelmingly positive. He has published over 60 peer-reviewed articles and an academic book, and at this point, we know the rest. He has served as the consultant for the British National Institute for Health and Care Excellence. He is currently serving as the interim chair of the economics department and is ranked among the top 23% of economists in the U.S. Another person well-deserved for this award. Thank you.
Comments?
I would say, if you guys have anything you would like to say, we'll give you a minute. 1 minute.
It's good to see you all again. Thank you for this huge honor. A lot of my colleagues from Grice Hall are not here this morning. A few of them are. But I've benefited so much from their guidance and mentorship. The research part of this job involves a lot of failure and rejection that never makes it onto the resume, but kind of accumulates up here. I've needed them over the years. And as an added bonus to share this with Dr. Emsley, 12 years ago I received a letter in campus mail about my tenure approval. Which I know more than a decade ago, that's probably fuzzy at best in his mind. But he's always had a special place in my heart since then. Thank you all very much.
Gordon? I'm going to be a little more formal. Thank you for this recognition. I'm really honored by it. In many ways, it acknowledges what I call a fulfilling career as a professor. But having a fulfilling career involves more than just a personal commitment to doing that. It involves an environment that's suitable for it. You need talented students to challenge you in the classroom, supportive colleagues, an atmosphere where you can both feel comfortable but also free to experiment a little bit, you know, both in the lab and in the classroom. My lab, by the way, consists of a laptop and a legal pad, but other than that, for decades now, WKU has led the Kentucky Comprehensives in terms of their level to which our students are engaged in research and creative inquiry. It's absolutely the envy of our peers. This experience prepares them to be, valuable citizens, educated, and for rewarding careers. And I believe, in fact, it truly serves to define their college experience. One of my favorite statistics is that we're in the top 40 of non-R1 universities whose students go on to earn doctoral degrees at R1 universities. We're good at this. So I applaud the president's initiative to enhance our research portfolio, and in particular to double our level of federal research expenditures in quest of that elusive designation that all of our neighboring states have. I looked at the map this morning, and it really does look conspicuous that Kentucky doesn't have a dot on it. Recent developments in Frankfurt would indicate that, indeed, our elected leaders are also supportive of this quest. So I'm a professor now, and professors profess. They opine. So allow me to opine for a minute. I believe that meeting the challenge means more than just moving our research portfolio upward. We need to also expand it to the right. Not just more, but enhanced. From regional to national, even international. From individual to team. From unidisciplinary to interdisciplinary. From single institution to collaborative. As I tell my students, science is a verb. Science is an endeavor, search for knowledge, but it's conducted by human beings who have lives, family, children, pets, emotions, aspirations. So for everyone who will play their part in moving the WKU research portfolio to the next level, I think it would be good to have someone to help them along the way. One of the things that UDP candidates are asked to do is to state in their application materials how they would increase their support of WKU's mission if appointed UDP. So I envision my role is to make myself accessible to assist others succeed in their research endeavors, particularly when external federal funding is involved, and thus to grow and expand the scholarly activities of the faculty, the staff, and the students, and you'll hear more about them in a minute, who will further advance the university in the world of student-centered research. And I look forward to the challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've been spending quite a good bit of time explaining what we've been working on here at the university and what we aspire to build and continue our progress. Part of the university are its faculty, our professors. And distinguished university professors are the exemplars of what we do in the classroom, in the laboratory, in our community. And I think both of them have articulated what, at the core, a university is, which is professors and their colleagues and their students asking and answering questions that are important to our world. And I'm so thankful that we have faculty who do that every day along with their colleagues on this campus. These are two tremendous examples of what they do and what we do as an institution.
Very good, yes. Echo all of that and thank each of you for being here today as well as being here the last many years, and thank all your colleagues that deliver in the classroom every day, and it is what separates Western Kentucky University from a lot of other universities. So we're lucky and pleased and proud to have you all here. Any other comments? If not, I'll accept a motion for approval.
Second.
Richard Thomas, Richard Nichols, second for approval of university distinguished professorship designation for these two fine faculty members. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign. Congratulations. Thanks for being here. Okay.
Yeah, so we have information item, but I would like to add one, if I may, for a split second. There's some data came out just recently that across my desk that I think is interesting for us to talk about that has to do with Fulbrights, number of Fulbrights that the students got on this campus. It turns out that we had 5 Fulbrights out of 22 applications. To give you, or put it into perspective, U of L had 6 out of 36 applications, and UK had 5 of 17. So we rank right up there with U of L and UK. While you look at the only other comprehensive in the state to get a Fulbright for a student was Murray with 1. So we are a different institution, and I think we do things differently and much, much better than all the other comprehensives in the state. And I just wanted to add that when we look for next time, the round will end sometime in the end of March. We have 9 semifinalists in the round right now, so I'm waiting to see how that goes as we move forward. Having said that, we'll go back to the Gordon Emsley show.
One thing that wasn't said about Dr. Emsley that differentiates him maybe from every other faculty member, he jumps out of airplanes. He likes to jump out of airplanes.
So I will not read his bio again. We know he's an awesome scholar. When you talk about 200 papers, that's in another world for most people. That's amazing. I'm excited for having him talk to you because it's really citizen science, and that's what we should be doing. So it's all yours.
Okay.
I have it.
All right. Outstanding. I'm going to talk to you today about a project called Sun Sketcher. And before I do so, I'm going to invite a few guests. Okay? They're on their way. This is from the New York Times last year. In their kind of year preview, what to look forward to in 2024. And amongst the fact that, you know, about half the world's population will be voting this year and a few other things they mentioned that on April the 8th, that's a Monday, it's 5 weeks on Monday, there will be a total solar eclipse. So you may remember the total solar eclipse in 2017 that passed over Bowling Green. This one, we won't quite be as fortunate. It'll pass about 100 miles to our west. But the article goes on to say, wherever you are, download SunSketcher. What the heck is SunSketcher? I'm going to tell you a little bit about SunSketcher. It's a WKU project.
We're waiting on kids.
They're on their way? Okay, I got about 100 students outside ready to come in. On April 8th, this is the path the total eclipse will take. It starts somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, reaches maximum eclipse somewhere over Mexico, enters the United States, sort of Eagle Pass, Texas, and continues through Dallas. We might have expected at least a couple of people to watch it there. One county in Texas, Bell County, just west of San Antonio, has declared an emergency for that day because they are worried about the influx of people that will strain resources. It will then continue past Conway, Arkansas, all the way. It will skim Kentucky, Paducah, Henderson, yes, Owensboro, no. These things are continuing over Indianapolis, Cleveland, just in time for the Cleveland Guardians home opener baseball game, which won't be that day, and disappear off the coast of Maine around about 3:30 in the afternoon. If you haven't seen a total eclipse, neither have I. I've experienced a total eclipse. It's different. You see a partial eclipse. Bowling Green will be 97%. To experience a total eclipse, with the sky getting dark but not really dark, the shadow bands, the animals going to sleep thinking it's nighttime and then they get up again 4 minutes later when the sun comes up. Watching people watching the eclipse. It's a great exercise in science and sociology and psychology and everything. Wear your eclipse glasses while you're looking at the sun. You be creative with your eclipse glasses if you want. You can just look at the sun through it. There's a crescent sun. My favorite is to go underneath trees and watch the branches make little pinholes so you get images of the sun. And when you do that on an ordinary day, the images are round circles and they kind of blend into just what looks like a white sidewalk. But in fact, there are crescent suns, and you see the individual crescents dancing around as the limbs of the tree move around. Or go to Dollar Tree, right guys, and buy a colander for $1.25 and use each of the holes in the colander as a pinhole camera and let it shine on the sidewalk, and you'll get images of the sun as it goes through its various phases of the eclipse. But this is what you came for. This is totality, where the center part of the sun is blocked out by the moon for up to 4 minutes this time, twice what it was in 2017. And you see the so-called corona. And you mentioned I study the sun. One of the great puzzles of solar physics is why is that corona so darn hot? The surface of the sun is 5,000 degrees, that may sound hot, but the corona is 1,000,000 degrees. And it's a little strange that things are getting hotter as they move away from the heat source, but that's the way it works. And the only time you see the corona is during solar eclipses. Unless you go into space and use spacecraft and so on. So this is why people experience total eclipses. They look at the world around them and they can see the corona. You can see planets. This may be your only chance to see Mercury, because the sunlight that blocks it usually just won't be there. It'll get cold because the heater's turned off temporarily for a few minutes, and so on. You may recognize some of these people. They will be introduced later. I promise in about 2-3 minutes. But this is October 14 at Stonehenge. There's a Stonehenge replica at the University of Texas Permian Basin in Odessa. We loaded up the minivans. We all drove to Odessa to witness an annular eclipse, which is where the moon's still passing in front of the sun, but because the moon's far away and the sun's kind of close, the moon doesn't quite cover the entire sun. So you get this little ring of fire around it. We were there at one observer, it's kind of neat, to test our app. We have a smartphone app that we've been developing, and I'll tell you about it. It's really exciting. We want to test it in Odessa. There's the track of the annular eclipse, October 14, and we were where the circle was. There's Travis. You may recognize him second from the right. There he is setting up his iPhone on the Stonehenge pillar. And here are some pictures that, I'll be honest, he didn't take. I don't think Clinton Lewis took. We have read about Clinton in your WKU Spirit magazine this month. You should. And Clinton went with us and took some really good pictures because that's what he does. One, two, there's the moon slowly advancing its way, come on, animation, across the sun. Which is the most interesting of those five pictures? Should do it like clickers, right? Hold number of fingers, you're the students, right? One, two, three, four, or five. Which one, guys? Which is the most interesting picture?
Three.
Four. Why four? There it is again. Clinton Lewis credit, this is a NASA website. See that little tiny dot there? That is called a Bailey's bead. That is the otherwise obscured sun shining through a valley between two lunar mountains. And if the sun was slightly smaller than it actually is, you wouldn't see that little bead. Only lasted about half a second. Clinton caught it with a 1/8,000th of a second exposure. If the sun was slightly larger, you would see that bead in a few frames. So by timing when the beads appear and disappear, you can learn how big the sun is. And believe it or not, we don't know the size of the sun that accurately. This will be an experiment which for the first time will divulge the size and shape of the sun to a few parts per million. That's 10 times better than we currently know. Again, this is Bailey Beads. You can see that the moon generally covers the sun, but this is a little bit exaggerated. The moon's not that really shaped, but if you blew it all the mountains up, they'd be looking at that. And right at the top, you can see some valleys where the sunlight shines through, and that's what makes these little dots of light. First discovered by Francis Bailey in 1824 or whatever, and they're called Bailey's Beads. This is the Clinton bead. And on the right-hand side is a map from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter satellite showing what the actual limb of the moon looked like at that time from that place. NASA has this data, and we could identify that valley. And we're going to send NASA a note trying to name it Clinton Valley, because that hole in the moon is what let that little dot of light shine through. We're going to use smartphones, ordinary phones, to make these observations. You will not get beautiful pictures of this from a smartphone, but you will get the timing. The timing will be good to a millisecond, which corresponds to about 10 meters of lunar travel. So we'll be able to tell exactly where the moon is, and therefore exactly how much sunlight is behind it and how much is not. People are a little skeptical about this. You're not going to get nice pictures from a million smartphones. We don't need nice pictures. Even a smartphone can give us the timing we need to make the scientific objectives. So here's Sun Sketcher. Who designed the logo? Is that Tabby and Janessa? Yeah. It's funded by a grant. We got a grant from NASA to do this, from the so-called HITS program, Heliophysics, Innovation, Technology, and Science. The goal is to develop, how's it coming, guys? I'll talk in a minute, a smartphone app both for Android phones and iPhones, that will use images during the April 8th, 2024 eclipse to take these images, crop them down to the useful science part, and upload those images back to Bowling Green to a server that we have in the IEB building up at the top of the hill. The data will be used to, let's say, make the most precise determination ever of the shape of the sun. And so what? Why do we care? Because the shape of the sun is determined by its interior structure, by flows that we can't directly see, but we can infer by looking at the shape of the sun they create. You can also test theories of gravity. You know the shape of the sun, you know its gravitational potential. And if you don't know the shape of the sun that precisely, you can let all kinds of other sneaky gravity theories rule for a while. This will allow us to eliminate or support different gravitational theories. The important part, this has involved a team effort like unlike anything I've ever been involved in. I've built NASA missions. This is bigger. It involves finished astronomy students, engineering applied sciences students to write the code. We have art and design students, psych sciences students, all working together, not to do the science, but we're hoping for a million people to do this, and to get a million people involved, it has to be an exciting user experience. It looks like that on your phone when you can download it. You can download it now, but hopefully in a week or two you'll be able to download it from the App Store. It will look like that. It has a tutorial, it has start buttons. The beautiful thing about this is once you start it, you just leave it alone. You do not need an internet connection. You can be in a field in the middle of nowhere, and I encourage you to be in a field in the middle of nowhere watching a solar eclipse. The app is completely autonomous. It knows your GPS location. It therefore looks up an eclipse ephemeris, thank you Travis, which allows it to calculate when the interesting pictures of buried deeds will happen. Choose the camera to take a sequence of 101 images during the appropriate times. Sends those images to another routine where Kelly will explain how to, if you do, will crops the images, sends them back, and then puts a little screen on saying, we're going to send these images to a server at WQA. Are you okay with that? And if the user's okay with that, they will be uploaded and show up in a server for later analysis. There's a lot of stuff involved in this. This, it takes a village. We have people doing app code development and integration. There's Travis. Travis, stick your hand up. Is Kelly here? There's Kelly, Shika, and Tamika. Hugh Hudson is an adjunct faculty member from Berkeley and the University of Glasgow in Scotland. You might have heard of it. And he's our resident guru in the lab over at IAB. They have a little sign saying, in Hugh we trust. Because he keeps us advised as to what we're really trying to do scientifically. Data upload and storage, faculty member Michael Galloway, Star May, Star. User experience, making it pretty, making it friendly so people can use it and get the right answers. Nessa Unsup from Psych Sciences. Tabby Klein, where's Tabby? Mark Simpson, Mark didn't come in here, and Leah Moss, all from the art and design department. This guy with a bow and arrow up against the wall has been dealing with a lot of stuff, just too many circles. But one thing that Greg has done a lot of work on is the important stuff if you're doing this as an institution. You got to watch the legalities. You're dealing with human subjects, and there are protocols for that. You have to have privacy issues. We will not be uploading personally identifiable information from the phones. We've been working with legal counsel to make sure that we're, you know, towing the line of these things. And last but not least, testing and publicity. We need to make sure it works. Kelsey, is Kelsey here? Mm-hmm. Introduce Kelsey. And Andrea with a fish. Where's Andrea with a fish? That's a team. And they've been working like crazy. For the last, these are our weekly meetings, not bi-weekly meetings. We were featured on KET. This is back from about September or so. There's Travis in Odessa, Texas, co-anchoring the news segment from CBS channel, whatever number it is. There's our website. I encourage you to visit. Hit the little yellow sign-up button so you can get updates. That picture was taken a little while ago. There's the countdown timer. It says 51 days. It's now down to more like 40. It'll be 5 weeks on Monday. I encourage you, if you have any questions, by the way, these are the people to ask them. But there's the bottom line. 5 weeks on Monday, hundreds of thousands, hopefully millions of people, eclipse watchers all along the eclipse path, will be using a phone app designed, developed, tested, and implemented here at WKU to all make a meaningful contribution as citizen scientists to a NASA science project. And I just thought the board might want to know that. I'd like to thank, I want to put his name up here, I'd like to thank the President's Office for their support of the XR Lab through strategic initiative funds. Office of Research Creative Activity, Jenny Redifer and her folks have also supported this, not just in terms of getting proposals going through and also but a generous financial support to help pay the students. IT has been wonderful. Communications and marketing are helping and are helping promote this. General Counsel, Andrea and Lindsay Carter, we had to work with them a lot to make sure the terms of agreement and stuff were legally signed. The External Reality Lab, supported by both Ogden College and Potter College. I'd like to thank some folks at UTPB for hosting us in October and letting us test the app out. And lots of people in NASA. You have no idea. Many people in NASA. That is what I call a sketchy. I even brought some. As if you remember, like Ohio State football, if you do a really good job, they put a little sticker on your football helmet. Well, they have little sketchies. And the students are sticking them with their laptops and things to do something really, really wonderful, which is like every day. We give them a little sketchy to show off. And with that, the team and I will be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Great presentation. I wish I knew more about astrophysics or whatever.
In front of you, I didn't bring your set of eclipse glasses, but you should have in front of you one of these, which is a... Yeah, one of these square things that you can look at an eclipse through. You'll get anything else, you won't see anything. That's the whole idea. And if you stay in Bowling Green, you can see the 97% partial. There should be a lanyard, which helps you wear it around your neck. And a little trifold brochure, which explains SunSketcher. And if you open up, there's a QR code in there, which will link to our website. I asked the students to all wear their SunSketcher t-shirts. They said no, they want to look professional. But I'm going to give Sam an honorary
SunSketcher t-shirt to wear.
So you'll see a lot of those around campus.
Questions, comments from anybody? Great presentation.
Last question. What's like the best place that's closest to Bowling Green that's like a reasonable drive if you wanted to see this?
So Paducah is in totality. The next closest place most likely is easy to get to would probably be Evansville. Evansville, Indiana is in totality, but if you have family around Indianapolis, they'll also be there.
Cool. Thank you.
So can we download the app now, did you say, or we have to wait?
You're going to wait just a little bit, right? The Android app has been submitted to Google Play. Android added a new rule that they instituted 2 months ago, which requires it to be closed tested by 20 users for a minimum of 14 days. It's kind of to make sure we're not downloading malware or something onto your iPhone. So after that test is over, they'll put it on Google Play. The Apple app will go to the App Store very soon. We're tweaking a few little details with the data transfer on that right now. In all honesty, if the app was available today, I'm not sure I'd encourage people to download it. It's not only going to do anything on April 8th. But, you know, when spring happens, middle of March, March 20th, expect the app to be available. Thanks to Jason and his folks, we hope to be able to make a big splash when that does occur. We're aiming for millions. Estimated there'll be 20 to 30 million people in the United States alone watching this eclipse. If we can get 3% of them, it's a group called SciStarter, a citizen science group. And we are posted on their Million Acts of Science website. If we get anything near the number of people we're aiming for, they're going to push for us to be included in the Guinness Book of World Records for most people ever involved in a single science project.
A number of years ago when we were doing the strategic plan, one of the things that was talked about a lot was tearing silos down and collaborative work. And it looks to me like you have done a magnificent job with that, bringing all these different people and departments and schools together and Not just here in Bowling Green.
It's been an education.
After you finish this project, I would make a personal request in that, you know, people have always posited, what's the Aurora Borealis about? Maybe you can solve that one next time, next project.
Well, going forward, we do have our proposal submitted for 3 more years of this.
Yeah.
Because we will learn the shape of the sun, but at one time, one snapshot.
Yeah, I think they're
the next eclipse, you want to go see that one, so will be in August 2026, so you'll need to go to Greenland, or Iceland, or possibly northern Spain, which the one after that, pack wisely, it goes through about every kind of war zone in the Middle East right now, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and so on and so on. So we're not sure about that, but we will be promoting this activity in future eclipses as well.
Mr. Bale, I appreciate the opportunity, and to the students, congratulations. I want to ask, I'm going to ask you to think about something that you learned that you didn't expect that you were going to learn throughout this process, and a takeaway that you think is good for whatever comes next for you all. But Professor Emsley nailed it. He just nailed it when he talked about the way in which the Strategic Investment Fund helped to elevate ideas and invest in people who have interdisciplinary or cross-disciplinary ideas. The interesting questions that are being asked and answered now in science, and I mean that broadly in science, social sciences, are at the edges of disciplines. And the more we do to get outside of our silos and create partnerships across those traditional disciplines, the more success we're going to have at research funding and attracting investment, the more interesting questions students are going to get to participate in. And the secret sauce for us as an institution is that we engage our undergraduate students as soon as they're ready to do this work in a way that you'd be lucky to sniff these opportunities at an R1 institution when you're a senior. It's usually reserved for graduate students and PhD students. That is invaluable, and it's one of the reasons that our young people are so successful at going to do doctoral work at R1 institutions. And so we talk about this when we're recruiting students here. Why would you go to a place that, yes, may have a larger research portfolio than we do, but you have no chance of participating in it until you're a graduate student? Come here, get the experience here, and we want you to stay, but if you really want to work in a different kind of lab or a different context, we're going to help you get there too. And so I'm just really proud of the work that we do on this project, but this is multiplied time after time after time across the institution, and it is a differentiator for us. We're not going to be Louisville or Kentucky, but we're nothing like the other institutions in the state either.
Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Clear the students answer the question now. Yeah, get some time to think. That was four.
First or?
which, not to continue to harp on the interdisciplinary nature of the project, but I wasn't expecting to use knowledge that I had gained here at WKU in the ways that I did. When I came here, even though I'm a computer science major now, I had declared English and photojournalism. And I did not expect, after I switched out of those fields, that it would ever come back again. And yet, now I'm on a project that requires a great deal of copywriting, a great deal of documentation, and it's a camera-based project, so absolutely my photojournalism knowledge came in handy.
When I joined the XR Lab, I believed that I was going to be pretty much just programming, doing mathematical problems the whole time, and I'm very surprised that over my 2.5 years working at the XR Lab, I've had the opportunity to work with physicists and people that know stuff about photography and psychologists and all sorts of people, and it's come to help me learn a lot of stuff that's not even in my own field that I feel will help me a lot in the future.
I'm sorry, could you give me a second?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I just had this.
For
For me, I think the biggest thing is when you first start working in a lab like this, you know, your thought is, oh, you're assigned this one title, this one role, this is the one thing I'll be doing. And it's been really interesting to see that not only are you doing your own role, but you and yourself and everyone on this team, I mean, we've all picked up extra stuff along the way simply because we want this to succeed. Like, you know, you go to your job, you do your thing, and you get paid and you leave. But for us, it's not just a job. It is something that we are genuinely passionate about. And I didn't think I was going to care that much what the size of the sun was, right? But after working here, I mean, I started working after that trip to Odessa, and it has been amazing seeing each and every single person on this team, myself included, have to break out the books and learn something new to really make this succeed the way we want it to.
So one thing that's been really exciting for me as, as a design major, and seeing, working with all these fantastic people, most of them are computer science people, and actually seeing this app coming to completion and about to be launched to the public with hopefully millions of users, it's really fulfilling to see something you've been working on for months go to a large audience and just everyone be able to get it. I guess for me, when I joined the XR Labs, I didn't expect to be coding such a big app. I had no prior knowledge of how to code iOS for iOS apps. So this was something new for me. I think I learned a lot, and it was also great being a part of such a great team. I also didn't expect that coming in. Such supportive of each other and such a fun thing to work with.
Okay, so one of the biggest takeaways from working in this lab is having to deal with like a strict deadline. Like Dr. Emsley said, the app doesn't have to do anything until I go in, but it has to do something. So having to deal with that pressure is, and like being able to do that now is a very good skill that I have taken away from working here. And also working with this wonderful team has really helped mitigate that stress as well. And I'm just incredibly thankful that I joined this project and got to have that experience.
I share a lot of the same feelings as Andrea and Kelly here. I actually joined probably the latest out of the entire team because I've just been on for like 4 months. I came in kind of expecting to do more coding because I'm a computer science major, but I've actually kind of floated between PR and documentation and then helping convert for iOS. And just like Kelly said, primarily it's such a discipline thing to like have to meet a deadline. I just have loved my experience with this team. Everybody is so welcoming. And it's not hard to get into the process, even though it may seem daunting. That's my favorite thing about it, is just like being able to learn such a fast pace and then also like immediately apply your knowledge.
Right. So whenever I first joined this project, Dr. Arbuckle just asked, "Do you want to go to Texas?" And so I was like, "Yeah, I'll go to Texas." And so, of course, that whole trip was very fun. And then after I came on this team and working on this team for months, I realized how big this project is. Not just for like, in terms of like our research purposes, but like for NASA, like what all data we can collect and like further other types of research. Like, I realized how vast and how big our research can help others.
So you just heard a commercial for YWKU, but also we think of faculty, and I see at least some future faculty here in front of us. You think of faculty as the work that they do in the classroom, in teaching. There's a different location where teaching occurs, and if you want a career where you ask interesting questions, work with interesting people, where it's not a job but it's a passion, that's what being a professor and doing research is all about. And we give that to our undergraduates every day. And congratulations and kudos and to the faculty, thank you for your leadership, for having a dream and a vision, and for continuing to elevate it. Those little dollars in the XR Center have really multiplied, and that's exactly what we're going to continue to do.
It highlights for me, too, the fact that in the new knowledge economy, every job's a tech job. Demonstrating that. So what a presentation. Provost Fisher comes through.
I didn't do anything. He called me.
Well, thank you all for being here, and thanks for a great presentation. Madam Chair, that concludes the business of the Academic Committee.
Thank you. Great presentation. Congratulations to all of you. And that's all going to look great on your resumes. That's what I was thinking about this too. Anybody would want to hire any of you after seeing that. Okay, so we are going to move on to my